Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we're here with the one and only Kevin Nealon, hilarious guy, coming to the Kennedy Center for a special evening on Friday, May 5th, Cinco de Mayo. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us.
Gracias.
I'm trying to think the last time we saw you out at the Kennedy Center. I feel like you were doing a little, you did the bull dance quote for me on the red carpet. Maybe it was Mark Twain for Eddie Murphy or something.
You are correct. Okay. You are correct, sir. It was the Mark Twain Award for Eddie Murphy.
Memories of that real quick before we dive into this, because I guess that was your last time at Kennedy Center.
It was. It was a fun night. You know, I don't know Eddie that well, but I did a movie with him called Daddy Daycare a while back. So I guess, and we've both been on Saturday Night Live at different times. So, and I guess they needed a couple white guys on there. So I was part of the program. And it was fun. It was a lot of fun people on there. And to play in that room was just outstanding. It was a real thrill.
Awesome. Well, this time on May 5th, we'll be all about you, not all about Eddie for a change. Now we got the Kevin Nealon show here. What sort of stuff are we going to see? Is it do you have like political humors because we're in D.C. or is there other current events going on, or you know, what can we expect?
Well, that's a good question. My act has always been evolving. I equate comedians to blues musicians. They get, you know, they live out their life and they draw from that, and it kind of gets a little more seasoned as they get older. So mine is basically, it's kind of twisted kind of approach on my life and an exaggeration of what's going on. And it's hard to really describe what you do as a comedy you do as a stand-up. It's like somebody trying to describe themselves to somebody else. But I have friends that say your comedy kind of sneaks up on people. You know what I mean?
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, so I don't know if it's a little more dry or what, but and also club owners say that they have to order more red wine when I perform at their clubs. You know, some of them, like the blue collar comics, they have, you know, chicken wings they need to order more of. So mine, I guess, would be more of a sophisticated crowd, I like to think.
Why do you think it's a red wine and not white wine? That's interesting.
I don't know. Maybe he said white wine too, but because I prefer red wine, I'll just make it red wine.
Oh, okay. I gotcha. All right. Well, take us into sort of how, you know, whenever we talk to comics, I'm always curious how you got into it, but you grew up in St. Louis area, right? How did you actually get
into it? Well, I was actually born in St. Louis. I only lived there for 3 weeks. I hated the place. I got in a car and I split. Now, my father actually graduated from SLU, St. Louis University, and then we moved to Connecticut. That's where he got a job. But, I was into music a lot. I wanted to be like, you know, a performer of music and a singer-songwriter, but I was just too frightened to do that on stage. It was too intimidating. And telling jokes seemed to come more naturally to me, and I really enjoyed the art of stand-up, the craft. You know, I'd watch these stand-ups come on TV, and I'd think, wow, man, this is cool. They don't have any tools or anything. They just come out and talk, and everybody loves them, and they make people laugh. And so I thought that was a pretty good career possibility. I kind of pursued that.
Who were some of those guys that, you know, you grew up in that made you love it?
Oh, man, there were so many different ones at different levels of, you know, my life. But, you know, there are people that go back. You may not have even heard of them, but like Stanley Meyer and Handelman. I loved Jerry Lewis movies growing up. You know, I loved that slapstick stuff, although I don't do that now. But and then, you know, before I came out to L.A., right before it, you know, years before that, it was more like Steve Martin and Albert Brooks and Andy Kaufman. I like that absurdity stuff, and they were so unique and original.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
When all right, so then how do you actually break into it yourself? What was your first gig?
Well, I went to New York City to check out the comedy scene because I lived in Connecticut and that was closer, but it was so intimidating. The clubs were so, you know, the audiences were the New York brash audiences and the comics were tough. And I thought, I've never been to California. That seems more laid back. And so I moved out to Los Angeles and I just started hitting all the open mic nights and developing material and developing a style. Because when you first start out, you're emulating other comics. You know, when you go to the clubs back then, they're emulating either David Letterman or Woody Allen or Richard Pryor or Steve Martin, you know, whomever. And then you finally kind of, you know, get enough stage time where you develop your own style.
Yeah, definitely. But didn't you also get an early break on Carson, right? Didn't you do a gig on that?
Yeah, that was my first big break. It was, you know, at the time I was the only late night talk show, and he was the king, and he was so great at it. So I passed the audition, and I got on there, and then I sat down on the couch with him. We did panel, and it couldn't have gone better. And it was really, to this day, it's the highlight of my career, even more so than Weeds or Saturday Night Live or any of those things.
Interesting. Why do you say that? Just because he was such a, you know, a god, you looked up to him so much?
Yeah, and also stand-up is what I wanted to do. It wasn't really to become an actor or be on those shows. I want to be a stand-up. And to get on the Tonight Show, that was the goal. That kind of validated you as a stand-up. And so, I after that, I've never had more of a natural high than waiting for it to come on air. And, you know, to this day, it's kind of like my feather in my cap.
Awesome. Well, you mentioned some of your shows, including Saturday Night Live. That's how a lot of us got to know you, you know, around the world. But take me into when you first hooked up with those guys. How did you actually make that connection? Was it through Dana Carvey, or did you bring Dana Carvey in?
Well, I knew Dana Carvey. We were friends from the stand-up circuit, and we were also renting a house together in the Hollywood Hills with a couple other comics. And he got selected to be on that show. It was really difficult to get even an audition for Saturday Night Live in Los Angeles or anywhere. You know, you had to have a high-powered agent or whatever, or have a reputation about you. So, you know, I wasn't even thinking about going on that show because I was a stand-up. I didn't do sketches or characters or impressions. And so Dana got on that summer for that coming fall, and he called me from Lorne Michaels' house that summer. He said, "Hey, Kev, I'm out of Lorne Michaels' house in Long Island. I'm in the back bedroom. Guess who's in the kitchen? Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd." "Are you kidding?" He goes, "No. Anyway, I talked to Lauren, and they're looking for one more cast member. And I told him about you, and he might want to see your tapes." I said, "Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray are in the kitchen?" You know, it didn't even register to me that I would even be part of that.
You buried the lead.
And, yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I sent my tapes in, and, you know, just to humor them. And a couple weeks later, I get another call from Dana. He goes, "Kev, I'm back out of Lauren Michaels' house. I'm in the back bedroom. Guess who's in the kitchen? Steve Martin." I said, "You're kidding." He goes, "No. Anyway, Lauren liked your tapes. I think he's going to fly you in for an audition."
And you said, "Steve Martin's in the kitchen?"
"Steve Martin's in the kitchen, yeah. Steve Martin's in the kitchen." He goes, "Yeah, someone's coming. I got to go." But anyway, so, you know, I flew in, knowing I would never get it. I thought it was just a free trip to New York, and I auditioned at 30 Rock. You know, I did, like, some of my stand-up and some just loose characters Dana and I used to fool around doing in the driveway of the house we were renting. And I wasn't nervous at all because I knew I wouldn't get it. Everybody else was nervous, you know, and I flew back, and 2 weeks later, I'm sitting in front of Lorne Michaels in a high-rise in Beverly Hills, and he's offering me a job on Saturday Night Live.
And you're saying, Lorne Michaels is in the kitchen.
Well, the next thing I knew, I was out of Lorne Michaels' house, and I'm in the kitchen, you know, and Dana calls me. He goes, "Kev, I'm in the back bedroom. Guess who's in the kitchen?" I said, "I am, big tough guy. I'm in the kitchen now." But, yeah, it was just like that. It just kind of goes to show you, you know, you never know what's going to happen. You know, just show up and do your thing, and, you know, maybe you'll be right for something.
Thanks. I'm glad we could, you know, run that kitchen joke all the way to its completion. That's great. Where, take me into that moment. You're talking of Dana Carvey. What's the moment where you were, you know, you're in, I guess, in the writer's room or whatever at SNL, and the idea of Hans and Franz comes into mind?
Well, the Hans and Franz came the second season, because after our first season, we went on tour. Dennis Miller, Dana Carvey, and myself, we did an SNL tour that was sponsored by Swatch. And we did a bunch of cities and theaters. And we were in Des Moines, Iowa, staying at a Red Roof Inn. And I was watching Showtime. They did Up Close and Personal, and it was Arnold Schwarzenegger. And it was just so hilarious, you know, listening to him, the cadence of his accent and things. And I called Dana's room. I said, "Dana, you gotta come over and watch this Arnold Schwarzenegger interview with me. It's just hilarious." And we watched it, and for the rest of the tour, we're talking like Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know, "Let me tell you something." You know, he was so, you know, pompous and all that stuff. And we said, "We got to come up with some characters." And I used to live in Germany, so I kind of knew, like, the names of Hans and Franz, and, you know, and the Austrian accent and stuff. And bodybuilding was pretty big back then. And so we just thought it'd be funny if there were these two pathetic bodybuilders who never did anything, they never lifted a weight themselves, and were just so full of, you know, kind of bitterness, and they would berate everybody. And we just kind of wrote that together, and Lauren put it on, and, it, you know, people didn't know who we were the first time, so they kind of, it was received kind of, you know, warmly, but, you know, not crazy. And then we let it sit for a couple of weeks, and I said to Dana, I said, "We should do Hans and Franz again, you know." And so we wrote up another one, and when we came out, the place went crazy, so we knew they were hits.
Yeah, you pumped us up, man.
Yeah, believe me now, and listen to me later. Don't be the girly man. If you took your belt off, you cause a flabberlunch.
you still got it.
Yeah, so self-important.
A lot of your other SNL characters that I'll never forget, they were, you had a lot of good misters, like you had Mr. Subliminal Message Man or Mr. No Death yes. Perception. Or
That's right.
Memories of those really quick, because I'm just like crying laughing thinking about them.
Well, the Subliminal, Mr. Subliminal or Subliminal Man, whatever it's called, that was a thing that came from my stand-up comedy. I was doing a thing called tagging, you know, where I would split those little words in.
Yeah.
And then I got together with Al Franken, and we thought we knew about subliminal advertising. I went to school for marketing, so I knew about that. And we thought it'd be good to fit those words in to try to get something that you want from the other person. Let's stick it, you know, things like that. And that became a big hit too. And it's funny, you know, you think you don't have any characters in you, or you can't do accents or impressions. But when, you know, you're put on the spot, you kind of rise to the occasion, and you realize that you can do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you're Mr. Rise to the Occasion. All right, well, before we move on to SNL, I just want to ask you really quick about Weekend Update. I mean, you were, I think, in my opinion, one of my favorite ones doing it. What was the coolest part of doing that, and how did you come up with that signature sign-off, the I'm Kevin Nealon, and that's news to me?
Well, the coolest part of it was a sit-down job, which was nice. and it was fun to be able to do topical material again and be able to just write jokes, because I went from writing jokes to writing characters and sketches and things like that. So here I was, you know, thrusted back into joke writing, which is kind of cool. But I was also doing the other, and I was doing sketches too. Dennis pretty much just did Weekend Update, so he could focus on that. So it was kind of a whirlwind, kind of a show for me, because I had to get all those jokes together from the writers that would write on the show. A lot of the writers didn't want to write Weekend Update because it wasn't a glorifying kind of a position for them. You know, nobody was talking about a joke on Monday. They're talking about characters that
right.
they saw. So, you know, I actually was paying, the first year or so, I was paying like writers in L.A. $50 a joke to fax me in, like a joke. And then I would write some jokes, and, you know, a couple of the writers wrote. But and then eventually they hired a full-time writer for me. But it was... The tag, the sign-off, that's news to me. I didn't have that the first show I did. And I was trying to come up with something. And then I was laying in bed that next Saturday morning, and it just kind of came to me like at 5 in the morning because I was going around in my head, and, you know, that's news to me. So, and then Robert Smigel kind of incorporated the turning head in the beginning, you know?
Yeah.
And we did a couple extra ones like Halloween, my head would turn into a pumpkin. Or, you know, my nose would start bleeding, you know, as yeah. I came around.
Oh, that's awesome. All right, so obviously through that show, you become close with Adam Sandler and transition into a lot of his movies. I mean, Happy Gilmore, I mean, we mentioned it at the top, but how often do you have people coming up saying, you know, harness the good energy, block the bad, do the bull dance?
Yeah, quite often, especially when I'm golfing. You know, like I do a tournament in Lake Tahoe once a year. It's called the American Century Championship, and you know, you get a lot of fans out there, and there's a lot of athletes and, you know, celebrities out there. So you get people kind of yelling that out. Feel the flow. Feel the flow. Do the bull dance, you know. But, yeah, I have done a lot of Sandler films, and they've always been fun. I'm, you know, friends with him, and whenever we do a film, it's kind of like a boys' club. You know, you get the basketball hoop set up, and there's guitars around, and it's kind of a fun. It's like a summer camp.
Was the bull dance thing improvised, or was that in the script?
I'm not sure about the bull dance. I think he might have had that, but a lot of my stuff was kind of improvised, you know, like feel the flow, harness the good, block the bad, send the ball home happy, you know, put a quarter in it, circular, goes around, bags are packed, you know.
Well,
I can't remember how much they edited out of that because we were just going on and on.
Well, I got to say, I mean, because you mentioned, you know, Bill Murray and all those guys earlier, you know, as people you grew up on, and of course, Caddyshack, but Happy Gilmore was my generation's Caddyshack. So, I mean, you're like the Rodney Dangerfield in my mind. Are you kidding me? That's awesome, man. The two greatest golf comedies ever. I guess there's not that many. But all right. Well, moving forward in your career just a little bit, I know you did, you know, Monk and a couple other things, but Weeds, Doug, memories of that real quick. And now you're on Showtime, so I guess you have a little more leeway.
Yeah, that was that kind of came into my hands. I always wondered if there would ever be a show like after SNL that would kind of make a mark, you know, for me.
Right.
Because I had done a couple of sitcoms that didn't last, and I'd done, you know, other things. But and then I saw this, the script came to me, and it said Weed on the front. I thought, oh, it's another stoner kind of a, you know, project. These things have been done to death. And I read it, and I thought, wow, this is really good. Good characters, good story. And I went and met with Jenji Cohen, who created the show, and she, you know, we just hit it off, and I was perfect for the part of Doug Wilson. And that, and I was just a guest star on the pilot for that one. And then once it got picked up, they made me a regular.
Awesome. Well, you've had a great career. What are you working on? What are you working on next? We've seen you all over the place and a lot of stuff.
Well, I have a show on now called Man with a Plan. It's on CBS with Matt LeBlanc on Monday nights at 8:30, and that's a fun show to do. I mean, we got good ratings, and we got the People's Choice Award for Best New Comedy this year, and we got picked up for a second season. We start taping August 7th, so I'm excited about that.
That's so awesome.
And then I've written a film also that I'd like to try to shoot this summer.
What's that one? Can we get a little teaser on that, or is it
too
early?
Yeah, it's called The Pleaser. It's called The Pleaser, and it's a comedy. It's kind of a dark comedy about this couple who move in. My young wife brings out her gay mother, who's a fertility specialist, and her partner to try to help us get pregnant.
Oh, nice. Where are you in the phase of that? Is this pre-production stuff?
Well, we're just kind of like securing some investors right now and getting the pre-production stuff done.
All right, well, we'll get the word out for you in this interview, hopefully.
I'm sure
that'll mean a lot. But
yeah, if anybody wants to invest in that, you know, call Brillstein Entertainment Partners.
Or come to the Kennedy Center on Cinco de Mayo next Friday. I guess in closing, you know, why should we come out? If they hear this, you know, why should our listeners come out?
That's a good question. I don't get it. I don't get it.
I don't know why you'd want to come.
Well, there's many reasons they should come out. First of all, it's a great venue. And we need a lot of comedy right now, and I'm bringing the comedy. And I'm coming with Kirk Fox, who's a great comic, too, if you've ever seen him, man. He's so funny. He's going to be opening for me. He's a headliner himself, and we're buddies, so we just want to hang out. It's a little tour we're doing. So, and I'm kind of developing material for my next special, so it'll just be a fun night, you know?
Awesome.
And I'm giving out money, too. I'm giving out a lot of money.
Oh, well, I like how you saved that for last. You should have said that at the top of the interview, man.
Well, you know, I want the real fans to hang in there.
Oh, that's true. Well, all right, if they make it to the end of this interview, then they get the money.
That's right.
All right, cool. Kevin Nealon, you're the best. Thank you so much for taking the time. We look forward to seeing you out there.
My pleasure. Oh, I can't wait. I'm really excited about it.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, thank you.